time when they came up the hill, the crackpot looked out and he saw that there were beautiful flowers along the pathway. And they got to the top and he said, well, it was nice to see the scenery. They're beautiful flowers. And it gives me a little solace, but still, I feel deficient. I'm only doing half my work. And I thank you for showing me the flowers, but I still feel bad. And then the water bearer said, next day, you notice what the other side of the path looks like. So the next day they came up the path and the crackpot looked out and saw there were only flowers on his side and the other side was barren. So then the water bearer revealed the secret. He said, I knew you had a crack and I saw you were spilling water. So I took the liberty to plant flower seeds along your side of the path. And for the last year, as I've been walking up the path, you've been watering them. Because the water's coming out, and now look, you've created a beautiful garden on that side of the path. And I've been taking those flowers and offering them to the master, and he likes them very much. And there's a way in which, when we have any organization, and especially if the organization is ISKCON, we have all kinds of characters. In fact, I was thinking about making a coffee table book called The Great Characters of ISKCON, and I already have a long list of people who almost seem dysfunctional or crazy. But at the same time, there's something they add to the whole flavor of the organization that's irreplaceable. We wouldn't want it any other way, practically. And the art of management, so to speak, is to see how those particular differences can be augmented and used in such a way that they give life to the organization. They help. There's a statement in the Brahma Samhita, in the verse Shriya Kanta Kanta Paramapurusha Kalpataravo, which describes the spiritual world, how everyone's dancing, and all the words are songs, every gate is a dance. And there in the translation it says, and all the living entities are enjoyable and tasty. They're enjoyable and tasty. I always appreciated that translation. But what is it that makes the living entity tasty? It's not that they're all boring, and that it's not that they're all the same, or they toe the line and they all follow the process exactly in the same way everybody else does. The real color and interest comes when people have their own ideas, and sometimes they're great characters. And even in Krishna's Leela, that's true. So one thing I've been thinking about in the art of management is keeping this balance. I mean, that's an obvious point, but there's a way in which, for the sake of reaching the point of full efficiency, one should be careful not to impinge the diversity. Don't impinge the diversity for the sake of full efficiency. Because in the balancing act between vertical alignment and horizontal alignment, you have to allow for that diversity. You have to celebrate the diversity. You have to fan the spark of the diversity, as Prabhupada did. And that's what, in the letter he wrote to Karandar Prabhu, he was indicating when he said, don't kill the spirit of the devotees. Make sure there's an environment in which devotees will do service that's individual, spontaneous, and voluntary. Individual, voluntary, and spontaneous. Spontaneous and voluntary. Make an environment in which devotees feel like they can use their individual talents, and they're inspired to do that. And then another thought I had just about that topic is a verse from the Bhagavad Gita in which Krishna says, Vitaraga Paya Krodha. he says that one must be free from these three tendencies. And what are they? Raga means intense attachment to the material world. And then Paya means fear of what? Fear of individuality. And then the third one is Krodha. It's like there's so many differing opinions, you just have, forget it. You know, there's nothing. You know, all you people are crazy. I'll just take intoxication and that'll be fine. So I was thinking of that verse in relationship to the way in which one must approach management. And that is, one might have the tendency to think, well, for instance, let's take ISKCON, for example, because we're in ISKCON, that there have been so many problems with diversity, with charismatic leaders, with people who are different and so forth, powerful people, and so, that I become afraid. So I want full efficiency, and the way to achieve full efficiency is to homogenize. Centralization means homogenization. And therefore, I'll equalize everybody, and I can pass laws, and I can make sure that everyone follows exactly in the same way. And by doing that, it's a fear. It's a fear of letting the individuality go. Look what's happened in the past. And this is exactly what Prabhupada's saying in the purport of this verse, Vita Raga Bhaya Krodha. He's saying that because the living entities had so many experiences that are disappointing in the material world due to individuality, that when the idea comes that the spiritual world is free individuality, it's individual, spontaneous, and voluntary, let the individuals go, then no, let's homogenize it. So it's one drink, that's it. We can't distinguish between it. And this is what Krishna's saying, give that up. So I was thinking it applies also to the art of management. Don't impinge, don't go too far, find the balance point, but keeping that idea in mind that don't be afraid to let the individuality come out, because that's what's enjoyable and tasty. That's what makes a movement interesting. That's what makes the spiritual world interesting, is the fact that there's that individuality. Krishna allows the individuality to go. In fact, he created the individuality. It's the mother of all enjoyment. Those are a couple thoughts. And now, back to you, Nityananda Pran Prabhu. Okay, questions are the answer at this point. Okay. Maharaj, I'll repeat because we have another microphone. Great.
Just as a sidelight, as a setup for my question, after we all got out of the house, my mother went back and got her teaching credential. And she taught in Watts, one of the roughest areas of Los Angeles. She taught English as a second language in the barrio. She did all kinds of far-out stuff. So she's quite an experienced lady. She was supposed to meet my daughter at the temple. They got their wires crossed. She's sitting in the patio for a couple hours watching the thing go on. One of the devotees recognized her, came and got me. So I said, Mom, what have you been doing? She said, people watching. I said, what do you think? She said, if you ever want to write a book, you got the characters. So confirming your point. I'm just wondering about I agree with everything you said, no doubt. And that's what brings a movement to life and energy and creative thought and all that. One could argue, Prabhupada said, when he asked Giri Raj Maharaj that famous, you know, how will it go on? Prabhupada said, you know, ultimately he said there needs to be also organization and intelligence. So how do you deal with the other side of the coin when diversity becomes a distraction or dissension? So no doubt you need one side. How do you deal with the other side?
Thank you. Nice question. It's a couple of ideas. One is that intelligence, organization and intelligence. I mean, what is intelligence? It's we can just take it that organization means passing more laws or mandates about different things, and intelligence means something similar, or we can investigate what is real intelligence. And intelligence has to do with the topic at hand, which is learning how to balance and seeing how individuals can contribute and so forth. Really, I think that there are some intangibles that you talked about. What is it that is the string that holds everything together? I really liked your point about respect. Respect requires enlightenment. Yes to sarvadi bhutani atmani vanu pashyati sarva bhuteshu chatmanam tatuna vijugupsite. One who sees everything in relationship with the Supreme Lord and sees the Supreme Lord within everything never hates anything or any being. So that's a kind of respect, and it's mentioned in the verse anupashyati, which means that one must systematically do this. Anu means to follow, and pashyati means to see. So one must systematically see everyone like this. What? In relationship to the Supreme Lord. How can they be engaged? And really, this is the Sankirtan movement. The whole movement is based on this principle that how can everything be used? How can everyone contribute to the whole? How can we bring everyone into the kirtan? Sort of saying it in a poetical way. And so this idea of respect means that one is anupashyati, practicing this principle, coming back to seeing how everyone can be used in service. And cultivating these sort of intangibles, one of them I wrote down that I think about a lot in the management and how to celebrate the diversity without letting it disturb the unity. Is first I mentioned seeing the bigger goal and emphasizing the bigger goal. And the other thing is I've noticed that competition comes about naturally. It's there practically in every species, and in humans it comes out naturally, so you don't have to push it too much. Because if you do, then it tends to bring out It can bring, there can be unintended consequences. Let it come out naturally. That's one thing. And another thing is to constantly bring up this point that Rupa Nuga Prabhu taught me in the first day I met him in the car. And he said, Trinada Pisuni Chena. He said, you know the principle of management. Be very humble. So my realization of his teaching me that is that one has to have a willingness to not take the credit for the results of the work. This tends to encourage individuals to want to contribute their best, and if the leaders are not trying to take credit for the results and not trying to control the results, that helps to inspire devotees to work together towards the unity. And it lessens the idea that of scarcity. It means there are equal opportunities for everybody. One of the great presidents of the United States, actually I don't know if he's so great, I said that before and someone told me he was a demon. I think it was Theodore Roosevelt, but he said that it's amazing how much you can get done if you don't care who gets the credit. And the last thing is encouragement. That true encouragement of devotees can only come from a non-envious heart. If you really don't care who gets the credit, you just want to see that the greater goal is reached, then there's a way in which if you encourage people, and there's always a lack of encouragement because there's a way that the material energy is so enervating that everyone's being dragged down at every second by their own mind, by their own body, by their environment, and so forth. So to make a culture of encouragement, to make sure to fan the spark. And I've just been reading Prabhupada's letter books. I know they're all online, but someone gave me those five books, those red books, and I'm just going through them systematically and reading all of them. And I'm just amazed at how every letter Prabhupada wrote had some encouragement in it. no matter what the point, no matter what someone had said, he was an individual. Even if they were sort of going off, even as they were going off, there would be, except in really extreme cases, that practically Prabhupada would, at the same time he was saying, come back to the center, he was encouraging their individuality. So not forgetting this principle that everybody needs encouragement, and there's a paradox there that if you let people go, if you encourage them more, they tend to come back to the center. And it sounds dangerous, but coming back to my idea, vita raga bhaya kro, don't be afraid. Take the brakes off a little bit and let people come back, but encourage them in such a way that they'll do the right thing. I know that doesn't make up for, you know, real wrongdoers and so forth, but I want to hear from Nityananda Pranprabhu, because he's actually he's got his feet, his boots on the pavement of the...
As managers, we are encouraged to, and we quite often align ourselves towards quantifying how things manifest. How many plates of prasadam, how many devotees came, etc. Because quantity gives a sense of measure. Along with quantity, there's quality that's as important. And the quality is that our organization that Srila Prabhupada created is primarily a relational one. We talk about the core of our teachings being relationship with Krishna. Not so much how many offerings did I make to Krishna, but with what quality of heart did I make to Krishna, like that. So quality and quantity both are important. And sometimes we see that in the name of quantity, quality is sacrificed. So that's one point, and I'll weave something else. The second is, I just vanished from my mind. Yeah, in general, every devotee who comes to Krishna consciousness, they hear about the missionary spirit. They hear about giving oneself fully to Krishna. We hear that again and again and again and again, which is proper. And each devotee wants to give themselves fully to the mission of Srila Prabhupada and Lord Chaitanya. So combining the two, when relationships are given higher priority than sometimes necessarily a achievement of a particular goal of or a direction, persons feel not only valued but empowered, that they will want to then give in such a way that they will also want to sacrifice their own individual idea for the greater good, if you will, for the greater goal. So sometimes from a quantitative perspective, it might look like we are taking some steps back or in a different direction. But overall, it's in the right direction. As we hear in the Bhagavatam, that sometimes when there are obstacles, the Ganges flows in the opposite direction opposite to the sea. She's just trying to overcome an obstacle to go back to the sea. Or when we want to take a big jump, the first thing we do is we trace our steps back and then gather momentum. This is something I've been meditating on. So I feel strongly, or I feel good about saying it, is it's not so much holding on to or keeping scores that, oh, every time we do it the way you say it. It's not like that. It's let's value, let's see. Sometimes we may forsake a particular goal just to make a person feel that they are part and that they are contributing. Of course, we don't say oh, you have an idea to do something outside the boundaries of Prabhupada's teachings. Of course, that's a given. We have boundaries. But as an organization, I liked your point about vertical and horizontal alignment, that sometimes for the sake of upholding unity, we don't give much credence to diversity. As you said, don't impinge diversity for the sake of efficiency. And on the other side, to honor diversity, we sometimes dilute the very goal that we are after. Because then it's, oh, anybody can do anything. It's after all individuality, and that's okay. So there are a lot of individual expressions, but no synergy. So a person who's a manager or a leader or whoever, because each of us is a leader in different ways, needs to know when to do what effectively. So,
two things. Classic. Thank you, Bhadra Narayan Swami, for the question, because it's a classic. Two things. One is, in response to his question, what's the goal? And I was in a recent situation, without identifying the situation, where diversity was stretched to the point of discouraging quality. And the manager was debating, weighing, should I, you know, tighten the screw, or should I just allow the diversity because the mission, you know, like, go out and, anyway, without the detail. And then separately, there was a discussion with one of the members who was really stretched dealing with other personalities who were part of the mission that were just so difficult, like discouraged and ready to go out the door and not be part of the mission anymore, because a goal of purity or another, maybe another word of is respect. I'm going to be me without respect of others being them. I'm just going to be me. And so people that wish to be, you know, part of the Hare Krishna movement that, you know, they eulogize, this isn't what's happening here. I'm out of here. So, back to his question, you know, drawing some boundaries that don't impinge on individuality, and, you know, the gift, the genius that Krishna has implanted in different people's hearts. At the same, it's a balance thing again. But, you know, at some point, the balance of, you know, this is not okay. That's where the rules come in. Where somebody is diluting the mission in the expression of their individuality, and they choose to not move from that position, although encouraged to move to the mission, not just the individuality expression. So that's where the rules fit.
Maybe just later, this never works.
Thank you, Maharaj, as we keep pushing the pendulum back and forth towards the center. Yeah, that's so true. And as a manager, I also feel that pain. And two words come into my mind that I've used often when curbing the tendency of those who want to go on a tangent and ruin it for everybody else in our local organization or wherever I am. It could be anywhere. There have to be rules and parameters. And then, of course, Prabhupada wrote that letter another famous letter to Atreya Rishi Prabhu about not being utopian, a word Prabhupada used frequently about things that were pie in the sky. And he told him, Atreya, who was complaining about devotees who were arguing amongst themselves, apparently, in the management.
Involved in that.
Oh.
He was a high-powered accountant in Manhattan. And he got a book and started coming to the Brooklyn Temple. So they invited him in to look at the books, the financial records. And it was, oh my God. You know, without naming the name, somebody was in charge of spending that didn't know anything about spending. So he wrote to Prabhupada about, you know, oh my God. Now, so Prabhupada's response was one thing to Atreya and then another thing to the person who wasn't handling money properly. That was the context.
I see. And in the letter, Prabhupada had said, does say, that the idea that Atreya Rishi was expressing was closer to Mayavad, and that is that there should be complete peace and harmony and no arguments amongst the, and no discord. And he said, he pointed out, and then in the spiritual world, there are differences. He said anomalies, and there's camps, there's sectarianism, but it's spiritual. He said sometimes Krishna milks a bull. Out of bewilderment of seeing Radharani, he milks a bull instead of a cow. And he said, then one can go ahead and find all these faults with the spiritual world. But he said that don't try to find this kind of homogenization where there's no differences and so forth. But going back to your point about what to do with when people go beyond the lines, and the two words that I think of frequently are mood and method. And I've preached this before to people who've come to the organization and then they have a different mood and method. And these two teams seem to, these two words cover a lot. So I'll tell people that you can do whatever you want as long as it's in line with the mood and method of the overall organization and with the local organization. And it seems to work because that covers both their internal and their external. Why are you doing it? What's your motive behind doing it? And so forth. And it is important for managers to protect the devotees. You have to have a safe environment for the devotees to cultivate their hearing and chanting. And safe environment means somebody has to be there to make sure that people are in line with the mood and method. And they may even have to move somebody to another place. And Prabhupada, oftentimes in his letters I'm seeing, when people were at discord with the local organization, he would say, go somewhere else. Find another place. And if you can't do that, you can come live with me. Prabhupada said several times, join my party and, you know, be like that. And he had a tendency to want to accommodate and put people in another situation where they could be in tune with the mood and method. There's just a small section of this book written by Rabindranath Prabhu that has to do with something related to this. And I'll just read this one part because it's so tasty, this whole book, so dense and well written. Srila Prabhupada's persistent invocation of the idea of cooperation in these letters discloses that the word carries special significance for him. We should take a little time to grasp it. This goes to this relationship idea. I really like that point you made. Relationships over quantifiable, countable results and so forth. The English word is derived from the Latin root meaning simply to work together, to work together with. But in Prabhupada's teachings, the term becomes freighted with profound spiritual import. Nice writing, isn't it? I mean, this whole book's like that. It's like, whoa! In a lecture, Seattle 1968, Srila Prabhupada conveyed this import with characteristic simplicity. Quote, when you do something in cooperation with the Lord, that is called bhakti. Unquote. This cooperation with Krishna, Prabhupada stresses, is essentially voluntary. We are persons, and Krishna is a person, and our relationship with Krishna is always open as a voluntary agreement. That voluntary attitude, yes, Krishna, I shall gladly cooperate, whatever you say, that ready willingness to obey is only possible if there is love. Forcing will not make me agree, but if there is love, oh, I shall gladly do it. That is bhakti, that is Krishna consciousness. Cooperation is the vital principle of all healthy social relationships, and it attains its highest application in divinity. I know. The Lord is supremely personal, therefore he is supremely social. For personhood becomes manifest only in relationship with other persons. For that reason, as Prabhupada said many times, Krishna is never alone. Goes on from there, but I just thought that, that particular section was particularly powerful, that it goes to this principle that it relates to your point about relationships, and that's what we're really trying to cultivate. And that's a key point. If we go after that, and I see in places where the leadership is enlightened and they're preaching Trinadapi, Suni, Chena, and relationships and so forth, there's a way that a lot of other things fall in place. And but just final point, and that is that there is a need to make boundaries and make sure that people who are not willing to cooperate, the duty of a manager, people who are not willing to cooperate and attain the same mood and method as is going on in the team should be accommodated elsewhere.
With unity and diversity, one thing that always interested me was when Prabhupada said that that Krishna inspires the policeman to catch the thief and he inspires the thief to steal. He actually gives both of them the inspiration, the intellect, how to do it, how to be smart. He teaches the thief how you can steal and not get caught, and the policeman how you can be smarter than the thief and catch him anyway, you know. And so in this unity and diversity, we can see this principle that actually in both cases, the boundary is the consequences. In both cases, they're consequences. They're consequences to stealing and breaking the law. They're consequences, meaning rewards, for catching the thief and giving one an occupation that would otherwise not exist. If there were no thieves around, no law being broken, there would be no real need for any policeman to exist either. So actually in everything there is like an opportunity and a challenge. And then if we can convert that challenge into an opportunity, then conflict is not so much happening, you know. When we see differences as managers, we see this all the time. People oppose our ideas. They feel like just the opposite of what we're saying is probably the best strategy. If we see that that's an opportunity, not a conflict, okay, let's try that strategy and see how that strategy works. And it's amazing how many times when people who otherwise would seem to be against the organization turn out to become very powerful proponents of the organization because they've been given the opportunity to test their initiative. And as they test the initiative, either we learn that we as managers were wrong and they had a better idea and that actually worked better for us, or they join us and say, yeah, we agree, we can see it's so difficult to do the things that we're thinking are easy to do, but when it comes to doing it, we realize that here are the challenges and the opportunities, and now we can see, we can respect you because you're doing that. You're doing all this work and you're creating results, and so they start becoming more cooperative, and the love and trust develops, which is actually the underlying, I think, qualities that make everything happen, love and trust. If we can do that, then as managers, I think we've succeeded in terms of our number one goal. That would be our number one goal.
Beautiful points. Do you want to respond to that? I'll just say one quick thing. I've noticed on book distribution that I heard about a devotee in Russia who is a prolific book distributor who, after many years, decided that he was going to voluntarily allow people to donate. And there's a difference between, there's a way in which if someone goes out to distribute books, I'm just using this specific example, there's a way in which through intelligence and, for lack of a better word, like psychological manipulation, you can cause somebody to give a donation. Because A leads to B, B leads to C, it comes all the way around, and you know after experience that, okay, they feel like, okay, now I have to donate. And it's not necessarily voluntary, because I've seen before, you know, using that process, that sometimes people change their mind later. That's happened many times, actually. And they feel the difference when someone voluntarily allows them to participate. So this devotee was going around, and when it would come to the part of giving a donation for the book, he would completely, first he would release them and say, now it's not necessary, you can keep the book anyway. And he really meant it. It also wasn't a manipulative, it gets really subtle here. Well, he wasn't manipulating them by saying that. He was he actually meant it. That you're free to go. And he already, in his heart, let it go. And then he would say, but if you'd like to give, then it, for your own benefit, you can give something and participate, and we'd appreciate it. And he found that he did twice as much. And so I started playing with that idea, because it takes a lot of work anyway to think about how to control people and how to manipulate the world. Whereas if you just give up and say, Krishna, whatever you want. And so I started doing that. It was phenomenal. I could actually see the results before my eyes, that when in my heart and mind, I would actually release people and not be attached and say, whatever you want to do as a soul, I'm not envious of you. I'm not going to make you try to do something. I'm not going to condescend. I'm just going to present it to you and you do whatever you want. People would go out of their way. In fact, sometimes we'd have cases where, you know, I'd be at a door, somebody would take the book, and I would completely release them, and then they'd give some, maybe a small donation or no donation at all, and then they'd chase after me later and say, no, here, I want to give this. And it was just, the experience was so overwhelming. So the principle was just that underlying what we do, the motivation has to be pure. In other words, in a voluntary organization, there was a book called From Good to Great. And the author had analyzed not just the good corporations, but the great ones. Because there's a lot of good corporations, but there's some that are great. And he looked at what are the basic principles that make them go, that make them really great. And then there was a call for him to write a separate book for the volunteer organizations like churches and nonprofits and things like that, because they found that the same principles that work in non-voluntary organizations and corporations don't work for the volunteer organizations. That there was a whole different set of principles that motivated people, that got them to want to cooperate together. So he wrote a monograph that describes in terms of, you know, scientific management and everything like that, how those worked. And one of the points is this allowing people to voluntarily participate from within the heart, having that idea, letting them go. Someone over here had a question. Yeah. We have 4 minutes, right?
Hare Krishna. Thanks, everyone, for such a wonderful discussion. It's very enlightening. And Vaishesh Kribhu, I think you just touched on part of my question. My question was, is sometimes when I think of like groups that have really solid, seemingly cooperation, I was thinking of the Amish community, for example. It seems like a lot of it is rooted in necessity. Like, you know, I can't live if I don't cooperate with my neighbor. I can't raise my barn or whatever it may be. Like, there's that sense of I can't survive myself without that cooperation. Whereas maybe in a volunteer environment or just the modern world, at least my mentality, I maybe hesitate to go through the austerity of cooperation because I have the idea that, well, I can just go read the books at home anyways, or I don't really need to go through all this to be Krishna conscious. So, you know, like somehow this independent mentality plays into the picture where it reduces the need of that cooperation, therefore my ability to tolerate or develop the qualities necessary to cooperate. How is that, from everyone's experience, how is that overcome in this kind of modern day and age?
Do you want to talk?
Was that clear as mud? Or
I'll say something, but I'm not fully sure if it'll address, but I think it's an important point. When we use the word voluntary, quite often it gets confused with the idea that voluntary means I can do anything I like. Voluntary means I choose to submit myself to Rupa Goswami's teachings of sadhana bhakti, where there are rules and regulations. And as long as I make the choice, I follow the rules and regulations. That is voluntary. Voluntary does not mean I can do what I like. And part of those rules and regulations that we voluntarily accept to submit to is serving with others, serving, cooperating with others. So we come to Srila Prabhupada and spiritual master and say, I volunteer, I'm expressing my individuality and free will to serve with others. That is part of sadhana bhakti. So I cannot say I'm a sadhaka and say that I can do what I like because it's voluntary.
I'd like to add something.
Sure.
it's the counterpoint of what you said. It's not I can do whatever I like, nor is it self-abandonment. I toss my individuality to the wind and I just become a cookie cutter devotee, but rather voluntarily I submit my individuality to, like what Vaisheshika Prabhu was saying, the mission or the goal. That's the goal, and what we want is this unity, or we want this mood of cooperation. Just one last, I've had the wonderful opportunity to associate with Rabindra Sarup Prabhu in the past month over a few things. And that little section that you read, it comes out of Rabindra with every breath. He is deeply, he's been deeply affected by what you read. He's seeing the world through that section. I mean, again and again, it's really powerful.
Yeah, I just met with him also. And
he's powerful.
And not only that, he's retired, so that makes a big difference. I was just noticing. No, but I just it sort of supports my point. When you can step back from the whole thing, then you can actually contribute more. And I have one more point to make after this, but that is that I'm seeing that the true elders are coming into our organization. When I met with Rabindra recently, when I was in D.C., I just made an appointment. We sat for a couple hours on his green couch and talked, and it was just. There wasn't any particular agenda. You know, it could be anything because he wasn't, you know, strapped by a particular problem that, you know, you are right now and everybody else is managing. And they're just free to, like, give whatever came out of them. I wanted to address your point with the something that I find very important, and it goes also to something you mentioned about relationships and what we emphasize, and that is motive and intention. The motive is so important, why devotees are doing what they're doing. Bhaktivinoda Thakur mentions that there are various motives that, in order to move, you have to have a motive. So what moves people? Fear. And then there's, above fear, there's prospect. Above prospect means, what do I get for this? Like once somebody came to me at the Rath Yatra booth in New York when I was distributing books there and said, yeah, I'll work at the booth, but how many do I have to sell to get a premium? I said, you know, probably about 20, we'll give you a free book. And then, So prospect, and then above prospect is duty, and above duty is love. So there are various levels of motivation, and one of the duty, one of the art of management is to purify the motive. Because when the motive is pure in your organization, in your team, no matter how small or large it is, if that's being examined and we're working on the motive, then the love and trust comes out, and that's the most powerful motivating factor. It can't be broken. And Radhanath Maharaj was pointing this out to me when there were other groups coming and challenging his Chaupati organization. They would set up a festival right next door and say, let's have a festival. You can mandate and say, nobody go there. You can't go and, you know, check out this other organization. Or you can preemptively create an atmosphere that the devotees have love and trust, where even if they went and looked, they're so fulfilled where they are, and they're so motivated by the love and trust. That's the their motivating factor. That's the ultimate fortification for an organization. And that is what actually takes away the flaws, is that internal work and making sure that the motive is pure. Yeah. Thank you for organizing these TED Talks, Rompad Maharaj. Hare Krishna. What time? 6:30 tonight is the next TED Talk. Hare Krishna. Vancha kalpadrubhascha krupasnabhevacha patitanam pavanibhyo vaishnavibhyo. We have it.